Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Jeanette Abney, and I want to again thank you for joining me here at another exciting episode here at Precious Predicaments at Blog Talk Radio. I want to first thank my Heavenly Father for waking me up this morning, and I want to say that I am truly blessed and highly favored. Now, today's show is going to be a very interesting yet again another controversial topic. And I picked these topics because these are some of the things that I see a lot of people struggling with on a day-to-day basis and also within my private practice. And because these things are happening, which is one of the reasons why I like to bring it to the forefront on radio, partly because when you talk about therapy, many individuals or so into thinking therapy don't work, they only want my money, they're not going to understand my issues, and in some cases that may be true, but by that same token, it should still never stop one for wanting to get some type of help or assistance. You have to find the right therapist and the right leadership and the right guidance to help you with what you're going through, which brings us to today's topic. Today's topic has to do with how do I become sober? Now, if you are struggling with a substance and you want some help, or if you are concerned about another that may be in need of help, today's show may be able to help you in a lot of different ways because we're going to be talking about the different treatment modalities. We're going to be talking about what it takes to make that first step in regards to taking that step, your starting point. How do you know when enough is enough? You know, a lot of times when we talk about substances, some individuals are okay with certain things because they use for different reasons. So we're going to be addressing that. Most importantly, we're also going to be exploring the differences between abuse versus addiction because a lot of individuals will say, I use, but I'm not addicted. And some individuals will say, I'm addicted, but how did I abuse the substance? So, as we know, many may want to stop using but don't know how. And even if you want to keep doing what you're doing, I want you to listen anyway because you still might learn something. Because that way, when you are ready, you know who to call. So let me join my guests on the air. Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing? Hello, I see your number, but you're not saying anything.
Yeah, this is Fred Williams.
Hello, Mr. Frederick. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hold
good.
For one
that's
second
good.
Till I have another caller. I think it's my sister from another mother. Let me see. Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, and how are you?
I knew you was my sister from another mama.
Of course.
We really need to talk. So,
yes.
Okay, Frederick, before we get started, tell the listeners who you are and what you do, and then we're going to dive into this topic.
My name is Fred Williams. I'm the assistant manager director for nonprofit Korean Community Services. Basically run an outpatient program for people that suffer from addiction or some kind of drug abuse.
Okay. All right. And my next person gets on the line. Tell them who you are and what you do.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. My name is Dr. Lisa Romaine, and I am the owner of Cox Romaine Psychological Service, and we provide counseling and support services specifically focusing on domestic violence, substance use, sexual assault, and domestic violence. And for those that have been on journeys in the criminal justice system, also New Beginnings and New Hope, which focuses on more of a nonprofit perspective with those populations as well. And we do marriage mediation because We believe in families, and I'm glad we're talking about this topic today because this is a topic that typically tears families apart. So thank you for having us.
You are welcome. We have another caller on the line. I'm going to join you in a minute. Give me 1 second. So this is one of these topics, you know, I want to say that I spent Thanksgiving with my family in Arizona, and it was a hot mess, and I mean a hot mess. And part that got on my nerve was the drinking, the behavior. And, you know, and it's sad because when you look at that, when the holidays come, I mean, we just finished Thanksgiving, and now we got Christmas coming up. A lot of families will be engaging in some type of drinking or drug-using behavior. And a lot of times when you start telling individuals, you know, maybe you might want to get some help. Or maybe, you know, and they don't really realize what they be doing, what they be saying, because sometimes it has become a lifestyle. And many individuals are what you call functioning alcoholics or functioning drug addicts. But I want to say, when it comes to the issue regarding drug and alcohol use, many individuals will also take a strong stand in, or stand on their ground as to why they believe. The first thing they'll say, I can stop whenever I want to. And, however, many individuals may not want to stop, which we know because we're going to be talking about how can I become sober. But the problem is when we're talking about that, especially for those that don't want to stop, sometimes they may be forced to stop, and they get angry because they enjoy the feeling that the substance may bring. And then when they get in trouble or they get arrested and they're forced to stop, that can become a problem. And a lot of times, many individuals have been told or been given ultimatums that if you don't stop drinking, I'm going to divorce you. Or if you keep sneaking, and ultimatums, I want to say, don't work. Now, I want to say one thing in regards to drug abuse and addiction and alcoholism are the most common problems that we know today are hurting our adolescents, our teens, and our adults. And one of the things Dr. Lisa Romaine indicated, it is also destroying family, relationships, and also individuals' employment. It can also affect individuals mentally, spiritually, and physically. And we talked a little bit about the legal ramifications, but also they're also death-related incidents. As I was doing my research, I found that there was a recent report that indicated that a number of Americans aged 12 and older are suffering from substance use, alcohol abuse, and it's about 20 million and counting. So what is an individual, family member, or concerned individual to do? Let me join some of these callers because my boards are blowing up, and I'm quite sure they may have some questions, especially if they want to know how to become sober. Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Okay. How? Say, nice to hear your voice. What do
Nice to hear yours.
What do you want to share as it relates to this topic in regards to how do I become sober? Now, I know who you are, and I thank you for asking. You know, when I was on Facebook Live, you asked me for the number. I have a question for you. What made you want to become sober?
What made me want to? My name is Nancy Hoekstra, and I was. What made me decide to stop drinking was my life was too out of control. I had had enough of just the cycle of, oh, here I am too stressed out. I got to go find a drug, or I had to go find a drink to calm myself down, or try to feel some type of normalcy, and it wasn't normal.
Mm-hmm.
It was getting worse.
Okay.
And
all right. So once you found
the reason why
worse,
I feel mm-hmm. that I wanted to step in and share what I went through is because I know that there's a lot of people out there right now hurting. And with a little bit of my story, that could probably turn the light switch on for a lot of people on the radio to hear, you know, it doesn't resolve anything. Alcohol doesn't, and neither does drugs.
Mhm. Okay. All right, let me join in on this other, log on this other caller, because they've been waiting for a minute. Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing? Can you hear me? I just logged you on. Last number, 73. Okay, I guess they just want to listen. Now, both Lisa and Frederick, you guys are in this field. Like you said, you with Cox Romaine Psychological Services. You also, Lisa, teaches at Palomar Community College, and you prepare students also in regards to this field, because it takes a strong person to be able to work in this field. I tell individuals, this was not something that I asked for. I'm not a recovering drug addict. Don't know what it's like to feel drunk. I tell people growing up in Compton, I used to throw onions and grapefruits at crackheads because they got on my nerves. I would pour people's alcohol out and put water in the bottle. So I was one that I did not understand addiction. It made absolutely no sense to me. And especially growing up as a kid in a home with an alcoholic parent and a father that used and sold drugs, I literally hated drugs and alcohol. I did. Lisa, what are some of the things that you teach your students when it comes to working with individuals as it relates to drug and alcohol use and abuse?
Well, one of the things that I teach them is to be true to themselves. And part of that is understanding how to be comfortable in your skin and just kind of accepting where you are. If we're not at a place where we're not perfect, we're not talking about perfection, but we're talking about recognizing our own reality, it's going to hinder the clients, the families, the individuals that they go and interact with. Quite a few individuals who take my classes kind of fall into different categories. One, they've had a journey much like the caller that just shared, and they want to give back. Because their journey was such that it was so life-changing that they perhaps don't want other people to go down that road. And then I have other individuals who have seen certain things on TV and believe that they, you know, would just be interested in the field and can help people. The last mm-hmm. category of individuals who are still very much on their journeys of addiction, and they are looking to use it as a recovery. And I always tell students that in the event that you fall into that last category where you're trying to help people and you're also on this professional road to becoming someone that people look up to and can help, but you haven't addressed your concerns, not only are you going to be triggered and really not move forward, but you're going to hinder someone else as well. So I often tell people that you have to have some very thick skin going into this field, because people are trusting you on their life journeys. They're going to share some things with you that may rock you to the core. But when you can understand that people hurt in different ways, because hurt is universal, and some of us use drugs to deal with that pain. Some of us use unhealthy mm-hmm. relationships. Some of us use a lot of different things. But with this particular population, it takes a very unique person to deal with people who are dealing with pain in this way. So you've got to be comfortable in your skin, be ready to deal with everything, roll up your sleeves and get ready to work with some amazing people who, once mm-hmm. they have the opportunity to learn different skills and they want to be on a different journey, they can. So those are just some mm-hmm. of the things that I teach for people coming in to the field.
And, you know, and it's interesting, Lisa, because when I bought the Center for the Treatment of Addiction, and I am also a licensed therapist, and I have four locations, well, basically three locations in Orange County, one in the city of Fullerton, Garden Grove, Huntington Beach, and those cover those three in Orange County. And then I also have the office in Oceanside, and then I work with Dr. Lisa Romaine out of her office in Marietta. But I want to say, when I first purchased the Center for the Treatment of Addiction, and I was not used to doing groups, I remember the first time I ever had to do a group was when I fired a counselor. And When I fired the counselor, I was looking at the clients. Clients were looking at me. I walked up to the board, and I wrote on the board, what is meth? Do you want to die? Because they had to teach me about the certain types of drugs, and I learned from them. But because I was a people person, I was able to take their experiences and learn about the substance, why they use. And I learned that they were amazing, brilliant individuals, and I had to explain to them another way of learning coping skills and learning how to function, because there are different types of abusers and users, and individuals struggle with that. Now, Fred, I'm going to throw you in here. What have been some of your experiences in regards to working with individuals that are in pain or coming to your facility that are in need of help? Because as we're going to tell people how to become sober, the first step starts with making that phone call, having a desire, because I learned that when individuals are court-ordered, they can be highly resistant. And, Nancy, you know men, we battled with that one. So, Fred, what has been your experience?
The experience has been kind of up and down. It's, dealing with the clients can be a struggle at times, especially when they quite don't know where they're at or they're not able to communicate. So that's one thing that we talk to the clients about is communication, talking about their decision to quit. Are they quitting because they really want to? Are they quitting because it's a court order? What is the reason why they're quitting? And we try to find their motivation for quitting.
Mm-hmm. Somebody got background noise. I can hear scrambling. All right, continue, Brett.
We try to find their motivation for treatment to see what is basically going to work best for them. Then once we get them in here, then it's about helping the clients deal with the challenges and stresses and anxiety that they're experiencing in their life. But what can they do about that without using the alcohol or drugs? That's the main issue right there, is trying to reteach them where they relearn responses to these challenges and stresses and anxieties that they have in their life. Because it was definitely something that they were learned. And we try to help them figure out where they're at in that process of learning new things, trying to get them connected to new positive role models, get them in touch with self-help meetings, AA meetings, NA meetings. But I think, the first step is to have them admit that they were powerless over the alcohol or drugs, that their life had become unmanageable. So then we will kind of unravel those situations that their life have come out of control. Some of them don't see their life out of control until we actually start saying, okay, now you're here with KC Services and you're on probation. You got all these positive role models that are going to help you manage your life in a healthy way. And it can be challenging.
It sounds like, Fred, what you're talking about is one of those aha moments. And a lot of times I know with myself, because I like having fun in my classes. I always tell individuals, you have to connect with a person before you can correct anything. Because most of the time the clients can be very defensive. They can become very combative. And the denial. And you have to basically, and I always use the analogy, they say you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. I always say I'll make you thirsty as hell. You're going to be looking at that water, you're going to want it. And then I'm able to use a different perspective because I'm not coming from I know what it's like to be an alcoholic. I know what it's like to be a person that used drugs. I can tell them I know what it's like to have an addictive personality because I'm the type of person, when I want something, I want it. So just like you want your crack and your meth and your marijuana, hell, I want me some fried chicken or some chicken wings, or I want to go to the casino. So I can relate to them in an area of addiction to try to help them reduce some of the anxiety that they may have. Now, I have some information, and the information comes from drugabuse.com. And they indicate that only a fraction of individuals who need treatment for alcohol and drug abuse or addiction actually receive it. Only a fraction. And I want to say, Dr. Romain, thank you very much. Callers, if you are out there and you want to call in, our listeners, you can call in to speak at us as a guest at 516 387-1914. I don't know why the number was cut off, but that is the number to call, 516-387-1914. If you have any questions for the guests that are on air speaking or for the caller or myself, give us a call because we want to help you with this journey and with this process because sobriety does work, but you got to do the work. Now, I want to share some information, and I already talked about how when we talk about the different types of problems that are plaguing adolescents, teens, adults alike. I grew up in Compton, California, and growing up in Compton, alcohol was practically everywhere because there was a liquor store on every corner. In addition to that, a lot of times our parents would party on the weekend or there was always some kind of social event. And coming from a teen's perspective, was after the parents or the grown-ups were finished partying, then the kids start partying off of the grown-ups left over. So a lot of individuals started using at a very young age. And I know my mother was horrible for what she did because my mother had this philosophy, I would rather for my kids to get high or drunk at home than to do it in the street. So my sisters developed the habit at a very young age that really was hard for one of them to really break. I don't want to throw up under the bus, but like I said, she got on my nerves so bad on Thanksgiving, I thought I was going to hit in the throat because she wasn't shut up. So that's one of the issues I have with people that drink too much. But when we talk about what causes addiction, addiction specialists agree that not everyone who uses drug or alcohol will develop a problem. And I believe that is why we have this challenge between abuse versus addiction. Because some individuals want to use socially. Now, whether or not someone becomes dependent or addicted to a drug depends on many factors. And while it is believed, and we know family history, genetics, environment, a lot of those things play a part in determining the susceptibility to drug abuse problems, we have other factors. And these are factors that also have to do with when a person want to get to that point where they say, you know what, I think I need a lifestyle change. One is the age at which the drug use started, the length of time the drug has been used, the frequency of use, the presence or absence of friend and or family support system. Fred, Lisa, any one of you want to challenge that? Even though I want both of you guys' opinions, who want to go first? Okay, y'all gonna have to throw you under the bus. Okay, Lisa. Come on, Lisa. Can you hear me, Lisa?
Okay. There was a little bit of background noise.
Yeah,
could you repeat the question again? Because the background noise was a little disturbing. So repeat your question,
okay,
please.
I talked about some of the things that causes addiction. Because,
yes,
first of all, we got to know how we got there. And when we start talking about how we got there, and when I indicated that basically when we talk about individuals that use and they feel that they don't have a problem or whether they're going to develop a problem, there's many factors. The age at which the drug use started, not only that, the length of time the drugs have been used, the frequency of use, the presence or absence of friend, family, or support system.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say about that?
Well, definitely those are some of the factors that we know that can predispose someone to substance use or any type of addiction. But I think what people need to understand, and I mentioned it earlier, is that pain is universal. And oftentimes people deal with it differently. And that's not always the reason why people transition into substance use. But I think people have to be mindful that everyone is always watching you, whether they say something or not, and your behavior is very impressionable on people. And so you have to recognize that if what you are doing is solely for you, then look at the environments in which you are engaging in that behavior. And if you're not ready, be honest with yourself. But if you do want to, you know, transition into a more healthier life, not only you can be a mentor to someone, but you can reach out to some of the things that Fred was talking about, you know, a support system, because you can't hang around some of the same people doing those same things because it's a struggle for you. It's a trigger. Much like when people smell something that is so wonderful, Say they're going by McDonald's, not that McDonald's is the best food, but oftentimes when you smell that familiar smell, you might want the French fries that they have, and we know that it's not, you know, good for you, but those triggers come to you, and oftentimes you're not really prepared to deal with it, and so you have to completely stay away from people, places, and things that remind you or would predispose you to engaging in those behaviors. You know, you also have to think about, excuse me, if you've ever tried to cut down on your own drinking use and you've just not been able to do that, find out what are some of the things that are causing you to reach for that substance versus maybe doing something else that you might like, reading, jogging, working out, or whatever the case may be. You know, the other thing is, are people continuing to remind you that the drinking is bothersome to them? Maybe you guys aren't having a positive relationship. Maybe your kids are seeing you do this, and maybe they're not of age of yet, but your behavior is very, you know, impressionable on them, and someone's saying don't do this because they can turn out like you in engaging in that behavior, or, you know, be around other people who are doing that drug or something else. And sometimes mm-hmm. people feel real guilty about what they're doing, but they just mm-hmm. don't know, you know, excuse me, how to deal with that. And I often tell people, don't do it alone. You know, you didn't come into this world alone. You don't have to do life alone, but you have to reach out to support systems and let people know what you're going through, because there is a lot of help, you know, out right. there. And if you know that it's full-blown addiction where your body needs it, you get up every morning and you have to reach for it, then you know that there's some physiological things happening that you may not necessarily be aware of. Maybe you're not thinking as clearly. Maybe your liver and kidneys are being affected, or, you know, you might have had a blank out or a blackout, two different things. But it's time to really get some help, because it's never too late to change. But it might just take that one thing that you engage in. You may never come back from that, and then your life is, you know, pretty much over. So, you know, we just need to be mindful of engaging in certain types of addictions, and just know that other people are watching, and you can bring them down, somebody down with you, or lift them up.
Got you. Fred, what do you want to say in regards to that?
Well, we're thinking that when somebody first start off using drugs or alcohol, it could be something that they wanted or needed emotionally from parents or from peers or from family members. The other way is people hang out and can start using socially, you know, socially hanging out with friends and peers and family. And then all of a sudden the behavior turns into a mental or a physical addiction. And that's when mm-hmm. we talk about, that's how they deal with certain situations in life, whether they're hanging out with family members, drinking alcohol with the family members. Once again, they're learning how to deal with that situation, even though it's socially, mm-hmm. they learn how to deal with it in that type of environment. And then when we talk about alcohol abuse, we're talking about a person that habitual drinking, occasional binge drinking, that causes, you know, problems with the work or school or legal or health problems, and they can mm-hmm. you know, repeat themselves in dangerous situations, whether they're, you know, a person at a party and over drinks, put themselves in a dangerous situation for, you know, all kinds of crime, you know, whether it's fighting or rape or date rape or et cetera, et cetera. Or it could be even drinking and driving. So most folks start off, a lot of people start off as just strictly abusing alcohol, mm-hmm. abusing. Then after a while, many of those people eventually become dependent on that drug.
Correct.
Whether it's dependent emotionally or whether they're dependent on it physically, they become, their body needs it. They keep thinking
Correct.
About it all the time, where they can't think about anything else. And, you know, some of the drugs, it's the physiological addiction that plays a part in it.
Correct. And you know what? And there is a strong difference between use versus abuse. We're talking about use and then building up a tolerance, and then you try to stop, and then you go through withdrawals, and then, you know, and those symptoms. And a lot of times people can't take that. And I want to make sure we go into the different type of treatments too, because a lot of times individuals don't know where to start. But then I also want to say, because when I looked at that information and I started at the age of 12, and then I'm looking at people in middle school that's 12 years old. I remember being in middle school And some of my friends may have been using or drinking or smoking weed or things of that nature. I used to always know, even as a teenager, I'm too old for peer pressure. You ain't going to make me do nothing I don't want to do. Now, I didn't ditch school because nowadays we got these kickback parties. We didn't call it kickback parties back then, but I knew when I had my children, that was when I learned about kickback parties. And one time, my daughter and I, we messed up a kickback party that my son tried to have in my house. But I used to say with the peer pressure, now, I wouldn't ditch school to go get drunk or high or go have sex, but my friend could tell me, Jeanette, my daddy got some coffee cake, or my daddy got some bologna. And I'm hopping a fence trying to get over the fence to go eat some food. But I didn't even realize that that was a food addiction. But it was just some of those things. And like I said, and a lot of times individuals, peer pressure becomes a problem. But as we talk about how to become sober, I want to first start off by saying we got to first address and tackle the denial. And when we're in denial, denial becomes our defense mechanism. It becomes a part of us that we know it's a problem, but we just don't know how and what to do about it. So I'm going to give you some information, and this came from Beachway Therapy Center, and it talks about 10 lies that addicts tell themselves. And I'm not calling a person an addict to be, you know, as an adjective to describe. I'm going to use the word addict as a verb as far as what you do. Because I tell individuals, especially with family, it's not that they don't like the person, they don't like the behavior. And many times individuals don't know what to do as it relates to the behavior. Now, what the lies that individuals or addicts tell themselves? As we know, there's nothing worse in life than the practice of what's called self-deception, believing your own lies. People try to fool themselves, and when they do, they wind up looking like the fool. They have here, which is called the top 10 lies that individuals tell themselves and the hidden truth behind the lie and how to overcome it. And I'm going to post this also on my Facebook and my Twitter just so you can read it, because these are some of the things that individuals say. Number one, I am not an addict. That is the greatest lie that one tells themselves, and the truth is hard to swallow. But when individuals realize that the individuals have difficulty coming to grips or accepting that they're clearly, they may be on a progressive and steady pace to a full-blown addiction to alcoholism, because the first thing they say is, not me. I don't have a problem. Number two, I only use on the weekends. This is another lie that individuals often tell themselves early on prior to they find out that they're in trouble. Number three, I will only use once in a while. And we know that's funny, because when you start thinking about once in a while, I had a client or a person to tell me not like that. I used to be like, okay, what do you mean not like that? The number one, the fourth, I can handle it, and we know you can't. Number five, I can't recover. And the sad part about the I can't recover is when individuals start to believe that they can't recover or they give up, that could be a problem. That's when we know that they are really, really in pain and they are in desperate need of help. Number six, AA and NA suck. It's a cult. Always tell individuals that the AA and NA is a support group, and some individuals believe it saved their lives. I like Celebrate Recovery because I like to celebrate recovery to talk about hurt habits and hang ups. So that's my preference. Number seven, I use to self medicate. The big lie that they've heard is somewhere, and it sounds really good, it makes them justified about their use. Number eight, I need something to keep my sanity. Number nine, which is interesting, everybody's doing it, and we know that the answer is not. And lie number 10 is why. The truth, meaning the problem is individuals don't realize how drugs and alcohol and substances affect their brain. Now, recovery, recovery, recovery. Plain and simple. Individuals have to, before they decide that they want to get sober, they got to first have that thought in their mind. They have to admit that they need help. They have to ask for help. And they have to enter into a treatment program. Now, we are 35 minutes into the show, so we have 25 minutes left. Lisa, Fred, let's tackle this when we start talking about treatment. Because a lot of times individuals don't know where or how to even get started. And we know that rock bottom is different for everybody. We also know that individuals, that there are signs. But I want to say it's very difficult to help someone that don't want your help. But by that same token, they got to be willing to talk about it, because recovery is an ongoing process. They're going in there, they're afraid, the anxiety, their depression, their insecurities, their relation issues come about. They're trying to numb themselves. They don't know what the triggers are. And we also know that individuals are more likely to relapse when they say that they can get sober on their own. So come on, you guys, let's tackle this issue. What is one of the first things, Fred, it will advise individuals to do if there are listeners out there who have the desire and they want to become sober? Because we're in the month of December. January is right around the corner. People are going to be making these New Year's resolutions. Our phones are going to be ringing off the hook. So how can they become sober? Fred?
One of the main things is through AA meetings or NA meetings, basically also called self-help meetings. And it's a way to promote as a way for a person to stay sober or stay clean. People that's usually struggling with alcohol or addiction, they often have a lack of social support. And in the absence of that social support network, the addiction can lead to their lives becoming unraveled, you know, sometimes homelessness. So I would say, you know, definitely go to some kind of NA meeting to get that lack of support. Because if a person is hanging around with people that's using, it's going to be very tough for them to stay clean. We need the positive role models in our life, people that are clean. And that's what the AA meetings offer. They offer people that's been clean for 5, 10, 20 years, different amount of times. And they can relate to a newcomer coming to the meetings because they've been that newcomer before. They just happen to stay at the meeting. And that's a way that the old-timers, I don't mean to call them old-timers, but that's what they call themselves, is to give back to the community by helping someone else get their life back together.
When you said that, Fred, I thought about this old gospel song that I love, and it said, I got what I needed. And it said, I went to a meeting one night, and I got what I needed. And that is true, because sometimes when they go to those meetings and they see that individuals are really committed, because another thing with how to become sober is you have to also not only admit, but you have to make a commitment. It's the relationship, and it's the relationship you owe yourself. And when you start talking about becoming, you got to figure out in your head, this may be where I am, but this is not where I want to stay. Even if, you know, because I have friends that are on dialysis because of drug use. I've watched individuals have seizures that have been addicted to alcohol. I've been to funerals of individuals who are overdosed on heroin. I've seen so much stuff I'm like, wow, this stuff ain't no joke. But by that same token, individuals still feel hopeless and helpless, and they feel that people don't understand. But by that same token, when we start talking about even the AA-NA meetings, we know that some individuals go to those meetings really don't want to be sober. Because I've had clients say that were drug dealers, if they wanted to go sell drugs, they hang out at the meetings because they knew that the people, they felt that they would be tempted. And that was sad. And I used to tell my clients, I knew the drug dealers from the drug users, and Nancy, you know, I'll tell them, if I find that you are selling drugs to any of my clients, you ain't got to worry about probation, you ain't got to worry about the court, you're going to deal with me. Because I would not come to my group and then be scared because somebody's in there trying to coerce them to get high. And so that's one of the things when you start talking about the meetings is sometimes individuals feel afraid and they feel intimidated and they want to feel welcome. Lisa, what do you have to say in regards to how do I become sober? One of the things that you could say is your first step that you can
Well, one of the things that I often try to get at is what's behind the motivation to want to do that. So we try to get at what do you like to do or what do you want to do when you're not using? Why haven't you done that? Who do you need to connect with maybe in order to start doing that? Because when you even think about the thought of not having this thing that makes you feel good or makes you numb or whatever, you need to have something to replace that when that's gone. And if you just try to mm-hmm. throw the drugs out the door, but you don't have anything else, like Fred said, you know, going to those support groups are great. But I have a lot of clients that say, you know what, I'm meeting some of the same people who are doing some of the mm-hmm. things that I'm trying to get away from. So that's not a positive place for me. But I tell them, you have to have a support system. Who's that person in your life, or who are the people in your life who have been bugging you about a lifestyle change? Maybe you don't like the life that they're living, but they're not, you know, engaging in those negative behaviors. Have them be your accountability partners and be open to listening and doing something different. But you cannot do it alone. Mm-hmm. And if AA or NA is not working for you, let's work on maybe harm reduction. Maybe you can't stop mm-hmm. today, okay? Mm-hmm. But let's talk about what is it that you like to do that you're not doing for whatever reason. Maybe you don't have the resources. Let's find the resources. Or maybe you don't know where it is in your community. I have a couple of clients saying, you know, I'd love to do this, but I live in this particular county, but there's nothing there. I get bored. So that's why I engage in this. Well, you know, we have to rechannel that boredom. We have to do other things, but you can't try to do it alone, because doing it alone has allowed you to be stuck in the place that you're stuck in. So I'm definitely getting away from people, places, and things that, you know, remind you of, you know, that lifestyle is great. But if you can't break apart right away, focus on what are some things that I would love to do but I'm not doing, and let's try to give more attention to that while we're working on the substance use or abuse issue. It's so important, because once you do mm-hmm. transition off of the substances, then you'll have this other sort of life that you've built up, and at some point you'll recognize that you can be just as happy or excited doing this other healthy thing versus engaging in these negative behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Sounds good. But you know what? I want to say something else, because I know that there were supposed to be some other individuals that were supposed to be calling in today, and they were basically, I was on my way to take care of some business, and I had a person call me trying to sell me some drug testing supplies, and they basically have a facility that tests specimens. And when we're talking about AANA, a lot of times individuals do need more treatment. So we're going to also be mm-hmm. following up next week in regards to the different treatments, because I had some detox places that was supposed to be calling in. The guy was supposed to be calling in regards to the different types of drug testing that's out there, because one of the things is, how do I become sober? A lot of individuals struggle with, when is the right time? And a lot of times I've had parents come to me where their teens or tweens and young adults have said, okay, I'm ready to go into rehab, but the morning they went to go pick them up or go in there to get them out the bed, they was dead because they overdosed, because they said, this is my last time. So mm-hmm. when is the right time? Now, we know that there's a long-held belief when we talk about addiction that they must reach rock bottom. And like I said, rock bottom is different for everybody. Mm-hmm. But before an individual will be ready to seek help, we have to look at this in regards to the addiction treatment community. And Fred and Lisa, that's where we are within that community, and that's why I'm going to be having other people come on, and we're going to follow up with this subject next week, because we need to let them know what's in their community, because a mm-hmm. lot of times individuals don't know where to go. So in today's topic, we're going to be talking about how you can call 211. How you can call your insurance provider, how you can go online. It used to be called it was ADP. Now they changed it to, what is it, healthcare services now, Fred? Because I know their fees get on my nerves.
Yeah.
But they can go correct. They can go online. They can contact the National Institute in regards to drug and alcohol addiction. So there's a lot of information. And I know that the Internet is also valuable when it comes to obtaining information and things of that nature. So we are going to be talking about the different types of professional help and interventions that are out there, because a lot of times individuals, like I said, they're scared. They don't want to give it up. They don't know where to go. And in many cases, they don't know what to do, but they'll say, I'm trying to be sober. I want to be sober. But like I said, it's an ongoing process. And one of the things, Lisa, as you're talking about people, places, and things, We also, when we were looking, I remember watching the show Intervention. Intervention was scary because I think if my family member set me down and had me in a room and I saw them all in one place, I'd be like, uh-oh, something wrong. I'd be ready, the first one ready to walk out that door. But when you're confronting someone, that always may not be the right way to handle the behavior. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. you have to basically, one of the main things is teach them new coping skills. But in order for them to stop, we got to remember that it takes time, it takes support, it takes patience, and it takes developing new skills. And a lot of times that's what individuals are afraid of, and that's what they're supposed to be receiving as they go to seek professional help or interventions. And, Fred, you know, AANA is a support. It's not treatment.
Yes.
Some individuals need a higher level of care because even exactly. with the program services that we have, when an individual is arrested and it's their first offense, it's supposed to be, they'll give them PC-1000 in the state of California. PC-1000 basically stands for Penal Code 1000, and it's a drug, alcohol, educational program. So we try to educate mm-hmm. individuals. But how do you go educate somebody that's been doing something for 30 years? Or you're trying to educate someone and they got way more education than you.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted one of my individuals, she was supposed to call me because I used to call her. She was the most articulated, intelligent person that I knew to use drugs. She would battle with me. She would challenge me. She knew more about drugs than I did. So mm-hmm. when we start talking about education, everybody don't want your education, your sympathy, or your pity. So we got to find, and I want to say within the community, more ways of getting individuals to talk because individuals are suffering in silence. They're punishing themselves. And in some cases, some places are making individuals worse. Because I've had people and parents tell me that their loved ones have basically failed 5, 6, 7 different programs. So we need to find a way to where we can help individuals once they walk in that door or they're willing to take that step. We have to be more open and more willing to say, hey, I got you, versus always beating them up and trying to say, admit this, admit that, because they may not be ready to do that yet. What do you have to say about that, Lisa? Because I know your personality is different from mine.
Yeah, and you know, when you were talking, I'm just thinking about we as a people have to recognize that addiction is a public health crisis. It's all of our concerns, just like people who have diabetes, who have other forms of illnesses. You know, substance abuse use is something that we all need to be mindful of. And when we are thinking about some of these laws that we put into effect, we open up people to greater things that are so much more harmful to them. And so oftentimes, as I share it with you, people just tend to come to me with all sorts of issues. And one of the things that they allow me into is their pain. And I don't think a lot of programs are tapping into that. They don't feel comfortable with dealing with vulnerability. And so oftentimes when people are able to vent, able to talk about, able to be heard or understood in a safe environment, sometimes this need for running to these addictions are, gone because they have a place where they never had a place before. And so people have to think about, you know, it's fine to educate them, but like you said, most people have more education than you can give them. Try to dig into what's behind this thing that they are using to cope with life. We can give them coping skills, we can give them all of this, but if we haven't dealt with the why to this substance, we're just kind of going round and around and around. And I think people need to be more open to getting into those tender places, but then people who are also struggling need to be willing to go there. And oftentimes people who are on these journeys, they're not trusting in general mm-hmm. because they have been hurt. So we have to understand where is that point where we can create a safe place, and are they going to get it the first time? No. Are they going to get it the second time? Maybe. But you have to be willing to carry that hope until they get it themselves. But you need to create places of safety, because part of this is the motivation to want to do something different. If you continue to beat people up, and if you continue to heavily encourage them to transition off of this, there's no real motivation to do so. And so the relapse rate is going to be much higher. So I would say, you know, create a place of safety. Yes, call people on their stuff, but they could tell you how bad they are and how shameful this has been to them and their family and work and things of that nature. But let's talk about some of the other things which, you know, they may not have an opportunity to do, and why they're using some of these substances as a crutch to get through life.
Mm-hmm. And you know what, Lisa, it's funny. I just got a text message. One of the guys with the rehab place, he's going to say, send me a text message. Hi, Jeanette, can't wait to listen to today's show. Let's do dinner. See how people are always trying to bait me with food?
Mm-hmm.
You know he's supposed to call in today, but I told him we'll do a follow-up so that they'll be able to talk about their different types of treatment, because a lot of times, like I said, people don't know what to expect. I have individuals where they walk in the door, the first thing they'll say is, are you going to drug test me? Or they'll say, well, I haven't used in 9 months. And I'll look at them. And I'll say, oh, for real? And I'm like, okay, well, what if I give you a drug test? Well, test me, and then I'll test them, and they're dirty. Because not only when you talk about the truth, the individuals that's ready to become sober, they have to be honest, too. If you're honest, and then hopefully the other person will be honest with you, which the other person will be honest on the other end anyway, because we are the professional. Now, I want to say professional intervention can help. And the truth is that intervention is a conversation. And that conversation got a lot riding on it. Because when it comes to what you call staging an intervention for a loved one who's been abusing drugs or alcohol, we know it can be tempting. And it's hard to really go at it alone, because some individuals may wonder if professional intervention is even necessary, if it's simply just a conversation with a loved one. But the problem is that conversation can go in a lot of places, especially blaming. You know, well, so-and-so did this, and I know, Lisa, a lot of times when you're looking up under the addiction, you got child molestation, you got domestic violence, you got family trauma in the military, you got PTSD going on. So there's a lot going on with that individual, with that pain, and a lot of times we got to know and be equipped to handle that pain. Now, as we know, with that conversation, the truth is that the intervention with that conversation, because the thing is, oftentimes individuals are in denial about their substance use, and they may react angrily and even violently when confronted. And even if they say, I want to do this, you got to be careful with that, because they got one foot in the door. My mother used to say one foot in the door and another one on the banana peel, because they don't know which way to go. Professional, as we know, and I want to let the listeners know, we try to ensure you that the intervention can run smoothly. So we want to give you a chance at choosing to get help versus a person saying you need help and beating you down for what you've done. Now, when you talk about finding a person to help you, sometimes, especially when you talk about whether it's an intervention or whether it's finding a program, call around. Check them out. Sometimes I always tell the clients that I work with, you are role models, because many individuals do not believe that sobriety works. So they'll try to tell you, or, you know, that place is a cult, or, you know, they want to know what you're learning. They want to pick your brain, because if they see you change, that really gives them hope. What do you have to say in regards about that, Nancy? I know we don't have that much time left. Looks like we got about 6 minutes left on the show. But, Nancy, I want to hear your perspective in regards to that. When people notice that you change, because you was a tough cookie.
Oh, when I first met Jeanette, she broke it down. And, you know, being Native American, you're supposed to be tough and you're not supposed to show your emotions. And you're just supposed to, like, be by yourself when you're going through something, and you're basically isolating yourself from the world so that you can learn how to overcome something. You know, I was divorced. He ended up with my kids. He was abusive to me for 15 years, blah, 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 you know. What I did, honestly, is I had stepped away from the Lord for a little while, but now I'm really striving to get to church on a daily, I mean, not on a daily basis, but when the church doors are open, I'm there encouraging other people. You know, this is not the way to go. You're just going to ruin your life even more. It's really hard to deal with a Native American because you gotta be, I don't know what the word would be. It would, from what I was taught, is you gotta be more receptive. You gotta encourage them so that they won't go back and, oh well, I'm gonna go snort some coke, or I'm gonna go smoke some weed or whatever. And you know, I'm in chronic pain, and I don't take my medications like the doctor says I have to. I take it when I can't handle the pain no more. Mm-hmm. And this year I've only taken my pain medication 3 times.
Mm. I want to say, too, you didn't just come to me. Somebody sent you to me. Because they knew you was a tough cookie, so they was like, oh, I know where you're going. And I remember the first day I met you. So that person trusted me enough, knowing you, to say, hey, go see this lady. And I commend you, because even after that, it's been almost 10 years, you don't go nowhere. Every time I look up, you're still around. So that means something worse. But you had to get to that point. And like I said, I am very proud of your success. I'm very happy with what you've done in your life, and you've always stayed in contact with me just to let me know how you're doing, and that's what gives people hope. That's what let people know, no matter how desperate you are, no matter how scared you are, no matter how you're not acting like yourself, or, you know, whether you're dealing with the physical dependencies or going through the withdrawals, find somebody to talk about it. So the first step of how do I become sober is first be willing to do it. You will become what you want to become if you put God first and you say, this is who I want to be. Because just because your daddy was an alcoholic, or your mother was an alcoholic, or a crackhead, or a junkie, doesn't mean that has to be who you have to be or who God has created you to be. You got to want something different. And if you want something different and you step out on faith, that's going to be the first thing you do, is step out on faith. And then after that, everything else will fall in line. Like I said, next week we're going to be following up with the different types of treatment, because once you step out on faith and you say, you know what, let me make this call. Let me call 211. Let me call the number on the back of my insurance company and see who's within my network. Let me determine whether I need some one-on-ones to address these issues. Let me find out if I have a mental health issue and I basically what's called dual diagnosed. Or let me find out if I got to address my trauma before I start addressing my substance use. So that is how you're going to start tacking down and breaking down some of these walls to help you get there. And then you learn how to maintain it once you become sober. Because maintaining it is actually more difficult than becoming sober. Because, Lisa, you know we got a lot of dry drunks out there. We got individuals that have been off drugs for years, and they still act like they're crackheads, or still act like they own drugs. So using is one thing. The behavior is something else. Now, we only have 1 minute left on the air.
Can I say something really quick?
Yes.
I wanted to say the people who doesn't want to be diagnosed with mental health problems and other things like that are probably in the court system, and they're probably fighting for their kids, and they don't want to be diagnosed with that because they'll end up losing custody of their kids. I'm done.
Okay. And you know what? And a lot of times, see, I'm also a term provider, and I work with individuals within the social services, and a lot of times that is one of the main issues, because people don't realize now, one of the main indicators of individuals losing custody of their children is because of drugs and alcohol use, along with domestic violence. Now, we only have 60 seconds left. I want to thank Frederick Williams with KC Services, located in Orange County. You can either look up KC Services, which is Korean Services, or you can call 211 and they can assist you. I want to thank Dr. Lisa Romaine for joining us at Cox Psychological Services. And She's also located in Marietta and in San Clemente, Orange County. And I am Jeanette Abney. I'm the owner of Addiction Treatment Center, or the Center for the Treatment of Addiction, located in Fullerton, Garden Grove, Huntington Beach. I'm also the owner of J.A. Precious, located in Oceanside. So I wanted to say True North Psychological Services, Inc., located in Oceanside. They do intensive outpatient substance abuse for teens. Give me a call if you want some information, 714-992-1677. I can link you with Lisa and with Frederick Williams, or hopefully they'll join me next week when we start talking about different treatment modalities, because recovery, sobriety can help. It does work. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you for your support. Till next week. Okay. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Fred. Thank you, Nancy.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.